Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Wednesday. To get you through all the crises we're dealing with in a world where few things are reliable, we are. So Jason Rancho, we're live on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on all those smart speakers, Amazon Echo, Google Home. We got a lot to get to. We only have an hour left to do it. We have an update on the protests here in Seattle. Some significant news concerning the SPD. Secretary Esper corrects the record on tackling rioters. Plus, an update on school plans for next year. We're going to get into all those stories. Try to fit them in the next hour. It's going to be difficult. This hour of the Jason Rancho, by the way, is brought to you by You Build It. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
So we have some significant news in the world of the SPD, and it's unfortunate, and it's 100% political. It is 100% political. The city of Seattle says it will withdraw a pending motion to bring to a close the federal oversight. And as a result, they are saying the reason why we're doing this is we want to review the response to these protests first. Now, this is a political move. The politics are either really, really good or really, really, really shameful. It could go either way. On the one hand, it would be viewed as a positive if the reason why they're doing this is they fully intend to put in the same motion to remove this federal consent decree from the SPD. They just know doing it right now might be untenable politically. Because of, well, the thousands and thousands of people right now who are in their sixth night of protesting. And they know that once they do the investigations, the cops, for the most part, will be cleared, and then they can move ahead at a time where maybe there's not going to be so much pressure on them to get rid of this. On the other hand, it could be really, really, really devastating if they're going to use these protests as a means to simply keep the consent decree to placate a community filled with activists who don't necessarily know what it is they're talking about, but they are being pushed forward by people like Shama Sawant, who very shamelessly said this earlier today.
Video footage since Saturday has repeatedly revealed that the police are the ones instigating the violence, and that in fact these seem to be not spontaneous eruptions from the police, but they seem to be coming prepared with instructions to orchestrate violence.
That is such a nefarious conspiracy to put out there, and she's doing it strategically. She is taking advantage of a country that is being torn apart, and she is tearing just some extra pieces away. She is trying so desperately to install her vision of a United States government where it is not based on capitalism. It's not even based on democracy. She's been open and honest about this, so I don't know if any of us can be shocked that she wants to push forward with her anti-capitalist positions. She's been open with this, and she keeps getting elected. But for her to say the cops are showing up to the protests right now with the intent of attacking, orchestrating violence, it's truly shameful. Now, Black Lives Matter Seattle and King County have put out a set of demands. Now, suddenly, the activists in the community want more body cameras to be on 24/7, where before, when this was all being discussed, it was the ACLU and the same activists saying they didn't want body cams on 24/7 out of their privacy concerns. Weird how all of a sudden they changed that. Fine. It's fine by me. Have the cameras on 24/7. When you've got body cameras on, it makes it much easier to dispel some of the nonsense myths coming from folks on the left. 2 weeks ago, we had an unfortunate incident in which the SPD shot a man. He died. We were told by activists that the man was, yes, armed with a knife, but he was running away from the cops and they just shot him multiple times in the back. That's what the witnesses said. And then we got the body camera footage. Multiple multiple officers had their body cams on, and it showed pretty clearly the man was not running away from the police. Not only did he turn directly to the police as he was ignoring their pleas to stop, he swung the knife at them. Now, that was clear. Producer Peyton, you saw the video the same way I did. Did I just make that up?
You did not.
That's what the video says.
It is.
That's exactly what the video shows. Was there any point in which they shot him in the back as he was running away?
No, they shot him in the front.
Now, that's not a political statement. I'm not saying this, and Producer Peyton is not saying this as a means to just back all the cops and all those dirty cops. That's not what this is about. This is about actually looking at what happened. And yet, right now, there's still people on Twitter who are claiming that he was shot in the back running away from the police. I'm okay having the body cameras on. I'm okay. What I'm not okay with are people like Sawant who are spreading these vicious lies. This is a vicious, vicious, vicious lie. And I'm not okay with Tammy Morales coming out, another socialist Seattle City Councilwoman, saying looting is okay. Or what was it? We should not be telling people that looting doesn't matter. We shouldn't be telling people not to be civil. I mean, that's pretty horrific to tell folks.
But what I don't want to hear is for our constituents to be told to be civil, not to be reactionary, to be told that looting doesn't solve anything.
Looting doesn't solve anything. So I jumped on the Jay Inslee press briefing today. I will say I was not prepared to ask a question because I did not think they were going to call on me, but they did. And I think I did a reasonable sort of summation of what I wanted to say. I started off, you know what I did? I start off by giving him a compliment. Because to the credit of Jay Inslee today, at least, I thought he addressed the difficulties of policing at a time like this in a reasonable way. I thought he spoke out very clearly against the people who are not the peaceful protesters, the ones who are throwing things at cops. And I actually thought he was very effective multiple times throughout that. So I asked my question. I wasn't really quite paying attention to his answer because I was literally then walking into the studio because he answered my question at like 2:59. Some people said he didn't answer the question at all. Another text messenger earlier today said he actually calls me a partisan. I don't think he did that, but let's listen to all of it together.
Hey, Governor, thank you for speaking to the sort of difficult nature of policing when some of these bad actors are throwing the rocks and the bottles. There's some lawmakers in Seattle that are claiming cops are instigating the violence. Shama Sawant, socialist Seattle councilwoman, claimed this morning that people are, quote, the cops are prepared with instructions to orchestrate violence. Tammy Morales said we shouldn't tell people that looting doesn't work. So what impact does language like that have on the unrest that we're experiencing? And what can be done either from your office or from other leaders to sort of push back against some of those narratives that are probably making things worse?
You know, what I think is maybe some of the wisest counsel that I try to follow, and I hope everybody does it. This just can't, we're not going to succeed in bringing more justice and peace to our society if everybody gets into their trenches and their bunkers. And people think of this as kind of a team sport where there's two teams in opposition. That's just not going to be productive here. What I hope is that everyone will look for a way to be able to have a very strong expression of a legitimate and necessary effort to bring more racial justice to our society and reduce this unnecessary police violence. And at the same time, protect that ability and not allow the people who do want to bring violence to endanger person or property. And I just think the more that we look at this as a mutual goal than sort of a, you know, an antithesis, as you know, the nature of your question is you're either for or against us. I just don't look like this. I know a lot of police officers certainly want to go home, not get hurt, and they don't want anybody to get hurt. And I know a lot of protesters who respect people who are trying to keep them peaceful, too. So I just think looking at it better through the lens of trying to be effective and protecting people is the best approach.
I don't think he called me out. I think he kind of answered the question a little bit indirectly, but he answered it.
He only sprinkled in like half of a metaphor in there.
Yeah.
Which is impressive. Usually it's like one long metaphor per answer.
Yeah.
He only had like half of one.
I think that's a reasonable answer, this whole idea that people should not be looking at this in a partisan lens, which I think very clearly he's talking about Shyam Sawant and Tammy Morales, who are only looking at this through a partisan lens. So, you know, a credit to him for, again, I don't like giving credit for doing things you're supposed to do, like talk to members of the press even when they disagree with you. But I will, you know, good thing.
Look at you. Look at you. You're giving this governor praise for something. This has got to be the first time since I've joined the show.
That said, I do have a gotcha question that I'm waiting to, and I told you the gotcha question. I'm just waiting for the right moment. It's not the right moment. I can't do it now because it would not look good.
No, I mean,
but it's a good question.
But don't we bag on the gotcha media anyway? You're going to be the gotcha media.
I am. You're right. But with a point.
With a punch.
But I'll have a good point. And it's actually to a good, but I'm not going to give any other details. Hopefully they don't listen to this podcast. The scene on the ground right now, thousands and thousands and thousands of folks are walking the streets of downtown Seattle. And at one point, there were thousands of people surrounding the Seattle City Hall. And what we're hearing right now, starting to hear right now, more folks stepping up and explaining what it is they want. Unfortunately, the people who are speaking out and giving their demands come from the fringe part of this movement, the fringiest part of the movement. They're talking about defunding the police. We should not, of course, defund the police. Now, if they have any specific problems with protocols, that is fair game to have conversations and debates. We might not agree, but I'll have that conversation. Some of the things they don't seem to like is the use of flashbangs or tear gas to disperse crowds. I'd prefer they not use that at all. Cops would prefer they not use that. The problem is you are giving them reason over and over and over again to use it. Part of the problem is you're throwing rocks at them and bricks at them and slabs of concrete at them. What are they supposed to do? Seriously, what are they supposed to do? Should they just retreat? Now, maybe that's what some folks want. You have no right to police us at all. We will do whatever it is we want to do. Unfortunately, that could also mean burning down the East Precinct. The East Precinct on Capitol Hill was shot at a couple nights ago. In Minneapolis last week, we saw their precinct get burnt to the ground. I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen. And I don't want anyone destroying any building. And if your intent is to do harm, the police have a duty. They have a responsibility to protect the neighborhood. Now, if everyone in the neighborhood wants to be lawless, then understand you're not going to get to call 911, and let's just put a big old border around it and you guys can do what you want there. But don't count on anyone coming in and providing you any help. If you want to live in a society of utter lawlessness and anarchy, understand that there are consequences to that. But here's the deal. Not everyone wants that. The vast majority of this country, of the state, of the city, want nothing to do with that. We don't want to defund the police. If you want to have a specific conversation about something in a reasonable way, let's do it. I'll even have the conversations in an unreasonable way. Just understand that when you're irrational, you're not going to actually win any arguments. Not at all. Now, people are still talking about the incident before the photo opportunity at St. Paul's Church. With President Trump, there was a report suggesting that the National Guard or the Parks Department, U.S. Park Rangers, were tossing tear gas and flashbangs and whatnot at folks. We saw a lot of people online saying that that happened. There were a whole bunch of quotes. But now, the more we're actually hearing about it, turns out that didn't quite happen. Secretary Mark Esper, Secretary of Defense, he spoke out against the rumors today.
National Guard forces did not fire rubber bullets or tear gas into the crowd, as reported. Second, guardsmen were instructed to wear helmets and personal protective equipment for their own protection, not to serve as some form of intimidation. Third, Military leaders, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, were wearing field uniforms because that is the appropriate uniform when working in a command center and meeting with troops in the streets. Fourth, it wasn't until yesterday afternoon that we determined it was a National Guard helicopter that hovered low over a city block in D.C.
So the reports were wrong? Got it. And by the way, there are some very seasoned journalists out in D.C. at WTOP who reported that the rumors were wrong, that what was being presented was wrong. Now, I'm fine doing investigations to find out all the details, but understand there are some media outlets that are flatly reporting lies. They're not even checking in on them. Because remember, as Don Lemon of CNN said over and over and over again, we have a dictatorship now. We have a tyrant in the White House. He says from the comfort of a CNN studio that is being allowed to broadcast, weirdly, all this anti-Trump stuff during the reign of a tyrant. Got it. Representative John Lewis, civil rights icon, Democrat from Georgia. He decided to weigh in on what was happening. And I'm so glad the message was against the looting.
I would say follow the way of peace. Follow the way of love. Follow the philosophy and the discipline of nonviolence. And never, ever become bitter or hostile.
Tammy Morales, Seattle City Councilwoman, got it?
But what I don't want to hear is for our constituents to be told to be civil, not to be reactionary, to be told that looting doesn't solve anything.
Tammy Morales is not a legendary civil rights activist. Now, John Lewis and I politically are going to disagree pretty much on everything, 99% of the time. But a message that says be peaceful, a message that says, oh, I know, probably don't loot and destroy cities. That's a message everyone can get behind. That's not controversial. In some quarters of the Democratic Party and the socialist movement, and certainly the anarchist movement, it's controversial. But for reasonable people, it is not. It's not. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
So Seattle Public Schools is going to decide what school will actually look like next school year by June 19th. So that's coming up soon. 16 days away. And they're looking at three different scenarios. Scenario number one is basically what we're doing right now, which is 100% online. Everything is going to be digital.
Love it.
Okay?
Love it.
Number two. Scenario two includes full-time in-person schooling for preschool through fifth grade students and a hybrid of online or in-person model for the older kids. So if you are over the fifth grade, I think is 23.
12.
How old?
12.
12? So for 12 through 18, you would have some sort of hybrid, which is maybe some days you do online learning, some days you come in, or maybe it's a mix of half the class. If you can do it online, you get to do it online. The other half, if you don't have access to a computer, whatever it is, you come in. Or number three, a hybrid for all students. Now, my assumption is, at least until we come to a world in which the coronavirus has a vaccine, it's going to be number two. We know that the young kids, we know that kids in general, under the age of 21, really, are not hit as hard with the coronavirus. Some aren't hit at all in any meaningful way, unless there's some sort of underlying health condition. So if you're the demographic that is least impacted by this, it doesn't make any sense for you to say to a third grader or a 37-year-old that you should not get to enjoy the in-school environment of socializing. Most of the reason why we send kids to school is so that they can learn how to socialize. That's what they do. Sometimes it's not at all about the learning environment for a lot of these kids. It's just about teaching them how to deal with other human beings. So I can appreciate wanting to get young kids to go into the classroom. And by the way, that also makes it a lot easier for the parents who don't have the ability to either just take time off to care for these, you know, 8-year-old kids as they're not going to, what grade is that?
Third.
Ninth grade? Third grade? They're not able to do
second,
that.
Second grade.
They're not able to just stay home from work to take care. And a kid who's 8 years old or 9 years old or 10 years old, they actually need some supervision. Now, a kid who's 17 doesn't necessarily need the same kind of supervision. Well, some of them do. But a lot of them don't need the same supervision. So doing some sort of a hybrid makes sense to me. I like that. They say over the next 2 weeks, parents, district staff, and students will evaluate the approaches before they make a final decision. Now, this is just about Seattle, but the state is going to go along the same way, probably. And my guess is when they're looking at certain districts where they, right now, they've not even been hit hard with the coronavirus, they'll say to them, it's up to you guys. If you want to do a hybrid, go for it. If you want to do all in class, just make sure you're following a basic set of rules. And that's how it'll move forward.
You sold me. I like the hybrid more now.
The hybrid is a good idea. And the idea is also, like, if you're doing something online, it is a different approach that teachers have to take. So the teachers have to be on board, and the teachers have to be trained on how to use online teaching effectively. Because not everyone is capable of getting in front of a camera, right, and delivering anything, any message, in a meaningful way. They're just drone on and on and on, and they're not feeling the energy of the room and the kids of maybe who they lost mentally to all of this stuff. It's like, I'm just not following. So just as long as we're doing the training, I'm okay.
See, and I feel like a lot of high schools are, you know, the point of them is to get kids ready for college. They teach you how to study. They teach you how to properly, you know, format things, cite things like that. They give you the tools for college. High schools need to implement some sort of online learning because half of college classes are online. I had no experience of online classes until I got to college, and that first one shook me, and now I love them.
Why do you love them?
You can do the work kind of at your own pace. Like, mm-hmm. things are due at the end of the week, and so, like, I have a final due next Tuesday. I've been working on it for the last
few
weeks.
That works for you as an adult. I don't think that works for a 13-year-old, which is why I still think you need the hybrid model.
And I like the hybrid model. I think that it's a good integration of it into, you know, these kids' brain.
Yeah. What grade are you in? Like 27th?
19?
You're old, dude.
19th grade?
God. Just can't leave.
I'm Van Wilder.
Okay. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. When we come back, Brian Nordwall is the owner of E-Bike Seattle. We've not been talking a lot about homelessness recently, but it's still out there and it's still impacting business. He's going to stop by to explain on the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. As the focus has obviously been on the protests and, of course, the coronavirus, there's been a topic that's getting little attention. It's on an issue that appears to be getting much, much worse. Homelessness in Seattle continues to devastate folks and communities. And when businesses reach out for help, they don't really get much help in return. Brian Nordwall owns Seattle E-Bike. He says his business is being damaged by the homelessness crisis, with customers, some of them, not even comfortable to visit at a time when it's already difficult to operate. Brian Nordwall, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason.
What started as two tents near your business has become essentially a tent city. So take us through the scene.
Actually, this is Tent City 2.0. Starting about, and I'm at the corner of Jackson Street and 3rd Avenue Extension South, an obscure little one block piece of real estate.
Mm-hmm.
People don't camp on Jackson. They camp on 3rd Avenue Extension South, and then again around the corner on Main. And starting about a year and a half or 2 years ago, we began to have a really bad problem. And back then, the city was using this system they've gone back to, which is essentially, according to the police officers I talked to, they have to line up 3 or 4 agencies, and then they go out. And it takes forever. And because it takes forever to get it done, we would notice that within 30 seconds, the first tour after the police and all the other people left, the tents would come back up. And we had an average of about 15 tents.
Wow.
And then the police would come, and it took maybe 3 hours for all 15 to be back. Then the system changed for the better. The police were given authority on an ad hoc basis to move the tents, and we had either none or one or two tents on most days. Prior to that time, we had four break-ins, several attempted break-ins, and that all went away too. Then came COVID, and the city changed its policy back to not only not letting the police act in an ad hoc fashion, like police have done since for hundreds of years, but also they're simply not moving people.
Yeah, they're not moving people, and especially during the coronavirus crisis, what the city decided to do was essentially stop any of the cleanups of encampments unless they get to a point where there is a significant safety concern beyond the traditional safety concerns of just keeping people out in tents. And so you've reported this to the city. You've told them that this is getting untenable. What was their response?
I sent a letter to a police officer that one of my local beat cops that I relate to said, this is the guy in charge. I never heard back from him. I heard back from the homelessness at Seattle.gov.
Okay.
And they basically explained that they're going out and trying to see who has COVID and interviewing people and talking to people and offering people transitional housing, which they've always done. Problem is, most of the people who choose to camp on Third Avenue Extension are not interested in transitional housing. So it doesn't work.
Yeah. So essentially they're saying no to the services that are being offered, which has been a complaint that so many people have pointed out, that if they're saying no to the resources, then, well, what exactly are we supposed to do here?
Right. And it's not particularly reasonable to expect people who have moved that far down for whatever reasons, the ladder of civilization, to necessarily say, yeah, I'll sign up for that. They're not compliant folks. They're not often through no, about 25% of the people on my block are mentally ill, probably, based on the statistics and based on my observations, seriously mentally ill. There was a Supreme Court case in 1979 that made it very hard to commit people. As a civil libertarian, I basically agree with the reasoning of that case. It's called Addington v. Texas. But the effect has been that it's hard to help the truly, truly sick who essentially need involuntary proceedings.
Yeah,
that's not the main issue on Third Avenue Extension South underneath my windows. It's I don't completely understand the folks. They seem to be different. I used to do volunteer work for Union Gospel Mission, and we would go out to the camps and give people socks and underwear and food and jackets when it was cold. And I talked to folks, and some of them, quite a few of them, were just sort of almost the Steinbeckian free spirit hobo type of person. That may have been over romanticized in the literature, but there were some really interesting folks who just needed to be outside. I think what attracts people to camping downtown is mainly drugs or just that sort of lifestyle, in addition to the people who are mentally ill, which we can't do anything about because of the case law.
Brian Nordwall is the owner of Seattle E-Bike. Sorry to cut you off there for a second, just to reset the conversation. Brian owns a business that is having some significant issues with the city of Seattle's approach to homelessness. When one or two tents come up, then just a few days later, they begin to multiply, and it doesn't stop unless the police are allowed to do their job. Now, in this letter that you wrote to the city of Seattle, you said, it's time for civilized people to abandon this place. It will not survive these insane politics for long, and the trends have been unfavorable for many years. So before we let you go, we only have about 90 seconds left. Can you explain or elaborate more of what you meant there, and tell us, are you leaving the city of Seattle?
No. I'm going to gut it out for a while. I'm 68 years old. I'm kind of winding things up. And I love Seattle, and I live over on the water in West Seattle, and it kind of makes everything okay. But it seems like what were the greatest cities are kind of committing a form of social suicide or civilizational suicide. This cannot end well unless it's reversed. And I don't see, when I talk about the trends, I simply don't see any political will to reverse the policy of essentially, hey, we don't prosecute people. We don't, I mean, not just for vagrancy or trespassing, but for really any nonviolent crimes. Things are getting bad, and there doesn't seem to be any interest in stopping it. The mayor was quoted, I think, day before yesterday as saying, I don't recognize my city. Well, as I said in my letter back to them, the mayor and the council sowed the wind, and we're all reaping the whirlwind.
Yeah. It's unfortunate reality for the city of Seattle. Obviously, we wish you the best of luck as you're winding down your days as a business owner in Seattle. But I think a lot of people need to be paying attention to the message that you have, and this can't go on for much longer. Again, Brian Nordwall is the owner of Seattle E-Bikes. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, can you, in fact, just simply designate Antifa as a terrorist organization? The president says yes. We'll find out more details what that actually might look like when we come back right here on KTTH. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Antifa organizations are terrorist organizations, and now the president is seeking to designate them so. But it's not necessarily as easy as one might think. So how exactly does it get done? Joining me on the line is senior legal advisor to the Trump reelection campaign, Jenna Ellis. Welcome back to the show, Jenna.
Thank you so much for having me.
So when talking about a domestic terrorist organization, it is kind of tricky to officially designate Antifa a terrorist organization. Before we get into how that can actually happen, take us through why you believe they're terrorists.
Well, I certainly support the president's designation of Antifa as a terrorist organization. And, you know, we have to understand that the meaning of these terms matters. And when we're talking about terrorism, we're talking about the use of violence that's perpetuated against civilians, against innocent people. And it's also for the purpose of bringing about policy changes in government through the means of violence. And so Antifa is very clearly doing this through the riots and through all of the acts of terrorism that they've perpetuated over the past few years. There have been people who've been calling for this designation long before now, and I certainly, from a strategic, a legal, and an American perspective, certainly support the president designating this. And also, Jason, it's very important that because of this designation, this also allows the Department of Justice and the FBI, through their Joint Terrorism Task Force, to also then employ more federal resources to look into the origin of how these organizations are funded, how they travel, what other penalties they might be looking at. So this allows the opportunity for much more meaningful and prompt law enforcement.
But so there is a difference between the president calling them out on Twitter, which I agree with you, I'm glad he did, and actually moving forward with the designation, which I hope actually happens, but that hasn't occurred yet, correct?
Well, so this is where under the Secretary of State's office and all this, I mean, there's more of a formality, but this is something that I anticipate will be more formalized, you know, if it hasn't been already in the next, you know, the coming days.
Is there a legal process for a domestic terrorist designation, like an official legal process?
Well, and so that's where there's already a designation in terms of how you can prosecute under Title 18 of the United States Code. And so in terms of domestic terrorism, I mean, these are things that if the crime fits the definition mm-hmm. of terrorism under these statutes, that doesn't even need a formal designation.
Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. Because as you can imagine, you know, there are folks out there who want this to happen. And my biggest fear is that it doesn't, because of the processes that we have in place aren't necessarily made to deal with a group like Antifa. I mean, to be fair to some of the critics of just saying it's a terrorist organization moving on, I mean, there's not a clear leader. There's a whole bunch of like subgroups within this movement. They're basically far left militant organizations, but some of them don't even call themselves Antifa, even though they share the exact kind of strategy and ideology behind what they do.
Right. Well, and, you know, and of course that goes into being able to prosecute an individual under these types of criminal designations, and that would fall under the standards of proof that are required in any sort of criminal case. Mm-hmm. If you look at, you know, co-conspiracy, if you look at some of those types of charges. But, you know, when we're talking about the legal criteria for designation, also I want to make sure to mention the Patriot Act is really where we get a lot of the legal designation and some of these criteria. And so, you know, these are a little bit more complicated sort of terms and enforcement issues that fall under the Department of Justice. But the president formally designating this is a very good idea in terms of making sure mm-hmm. that these types of federal resources now can be employed. Because remember, under the Constitution, he is the chief executive law enforcement officer. And so when we're talking about enforcing any federal law, that is through the Department of Justice, but ultimately the president can direct those types of activities.
Just joining me, we're talking with Jenna Ellis. She's the senior legal advisor to the president's reelection campaign. She's also an attorney for the president. Let's talk about the whole idea that no matter what the president does, the media is always there to call him a dictator, a tyrant. They've been doing that for the last 3+ years, doing that, by the way, on CNN, on MSNBC, which if we actually lived in a dictatorship, something tells me they wouldn't actually be able to do that. I mean, how concerned are you that this move to designate Antifa or any far left or far right militant organization as a terrorist group, how worried are you that these Democratic voices, and they're primarily Democratic voices, are going to legitimately get in the way of it?
Well, you know, that is a concern if you look at the state and local level and how a lot of these Democrat-led cities are just allowing these criminal activities, these terrorist groups, to just exercise the tools of anarchy. And, you know, if we go back to the purpose and the design of the U.S. Constitution, we have limited powers within our government structure that we, the people, through our consent, provide under our Constitution, and that's to make sure to restrain tyranny. But then we also provide those legitimate powers in order to restrain anarchy. And so we have this natural tension between the freedom to peaceably assemble, to exercise freedom of speech, to protest, to petition the government, all of those things that we can and should be able to do legally and lawfully. But then true justice and law enforcement is to make sure that we are punishing evildoers in our society. And so for the Democrats who are looking, I mean, even Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's staff and so many leftist Hollywood celebrities are actually materially and financially providing funding to bail out a lot of these bad actors. And their whole point and philosophy behind this is that they want to fundamentally transform America. Yeah. They are not about a system of law and order. They are not about true justice. And so they are wanting to make sure to continue to perpetuate the chaos so that it results in the absolute power of the progressive leftist movement. So this isn't just an isolated sort of, you know, idea of, oh, well, President Trump designated this one terrorist group. This is about a much more complex and overarching philosophy of the progressive left that's fundamentally anti-American.
It fundamentally decides to push their ideology over true justice. They call it social justice. It's not. We have a sitting Seattle city councilwoman, a socialist by the name of Tammy Morales, who just yesterday endorsed the idea of looting, saying that she doesn't want to hear people saying looting doesn't work. This is incredibly dangerous. And what I don't think they realize, or maybe they do, and it's really just nefarious actors here, by encouraging this kind of lawlessness, they are forcing law enforcement to get involved in ways they otherwise wouldn't. No one would be breaking up peaceful protesting. No one is breaking up peaceful protesting.
Exactly. And so we have to recognize that there are, we can't just paint all of these people who are demonstrating, if you want to use that word, with one broad brush. There are people who are peacefully protesting. There are people who are contacting their representatives and having these very valid conversations of, you know, how can we make our society better? But then there are people who are actively burning down churches. They're defacing state monuments. They're looting these private businesses. They're not out to change anything about the law. They're lawbreakers. And that's where then, unfortunately, the government at that point is obligated to step in. And President Trump very clearly said yesterday that it is his duty under his oath of office to step in and make sure that this violence is quelled. And he would not be exercising his obligations under his oath of office that we elected him to do if he were not stepping in and making sure to combat this violence and bring about true justice.
And yet, as cities burn, the mayors and the state governors are calling out Donald Trump and not the actual anarchists and socialists and Antifa. We've been talking with Jenna Ellis. She's senior legal advisor to the Trump reelection campaign. Thank you so much for stopping by, as always. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Absolutely. You've been listening to The Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really, really do appreciate it. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants for ongoing analysis throughout the night. twitter.com/JasonRants. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.